You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, proper proofers propelling into prosperous progress. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your not-so-regular quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 198, and I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your special spitters of spectacular spadefuls of spanakopita and spare ribs.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris. Karen, did you ever feel not so regular?
Ew. Quick special shout out to Brad, who I met 2 days ago at the Fargo, North Dakota airport on a 20-person or so flight to Denver. I was talking to a family about the race. You know, I was there for a marathon, and he heard me and he approached me and he's like, "Are you Karen?" And I was like, "Yes." He's like, "Oh, you're from Good Job Brain. I love that podcast." And then followed it up, "What are you doing in Fargo?"
That's a fair question.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Marathon. It was a great marathon, great course.
And he was one of the passengers.
Yes, on my
this
flight.
Little puddle jumper, 20 person. Yeah.
Aww. Then, you know, the flights that you have to, like, you can maybe only fit a backpack up on top.
I've been on those. The ones where they seriously distribute the passengers on the left and the right sides of the plane isn't imbalanced. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's nuts.
All right, Brad.
That's nuts.
Yeah. Is Brad a native Fargoite?
Yes, he is.
Fargoian.
Lives in Texas.
Okay.
Now.
All right.
But Fargo's a cool town. Cold, but cool.
Well, I would like to let you all know that I also was talking recently with a Good Job Brain listener, my wife, who also was on an airplane, who also was on an airplane to Thailand recently and went to the Japanese chain of convenience stores Family Mart in Thailand and brought us back some wonderful Thailand snacks for everybody.
Wonderful as in, like, quote, wonderful?
As in scare quotes around
the world. Yeah.
You be the judge.
Oh, okay. Yo, we're reviving our taste test segment. Surprise taste test. Are we guessing what they are, or are you going to show
us? Or are you going to tell us, and we evaluate how close it is to the mark?
I'll shake them.
It's like a mystery box.
And then you can say what it is. Did you hear that? I'll shake them again.
It sounds like a coated candy treat to me.
Sounds like nuts.
Ooh, you're both probably very close. These are delicious cheese and barbecue flavored insects.
Oh my god.
We've got a bag of, this is right off the rack at Family Mart in Thailand. We got
Is it crickets?
It's adorable. This is crickets. We got some barbecue crispy small crickets here. You can pass that around.
It's a picture of a real cute cricket cooking crickets.
It is.
And this is a picture of a adorable little silkworm holding some cheese with little hearts over his head. He loves cheese.
I'm not sure I trust a cricket who cooks other crickets and then sells them.
No, he's just cooking normal barbecue.
Oh, you're right. Okay, I see. Yeah.
He's grilling vegetables.
True. All right, let me see this one.
Recently, Good Job Brain fans on Facebook, you probably saw a video I shared. It was a growth progression of Hercules beetle, which is a very, very large, shiny, beautiful beetle.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Kind of gross growing up. It's like a fat grub. Yeah. It goes through an awkward...
If you saw a time-lapse of me growing up, it'd be pretty gross, too, I have to admit.
It smells like bugs coated in barbecue powder.
Really?
It's got a...
A bug flavor.
I will at least take a look.
It's got a...
I will at least take a look.
You're not going to try it?
I'm in one step at a time.
You're going to look first? I would try ripping it from the top.
When I was in elementary school...
You
got to
rip it down from the top on one
grubs, of them. Yeah. Grubs creep me out. I can't even look at it.
When I was in elementary school, we raised...
silkworms.
We raised... No, not for eating. We raised those kind of worms. Like, I think we put them in oatmeal or something, and they, like, cleaned themselves out. Somebody... killed them. I was a little kid, so it wasn't me. But then we chopped it up and put it in cookies.
What?
We made cookies with them.
This was in elementary school?
Elementary school.
How did the silkworms...
The cheese-flavor silkworms have a heady aroma.
Oh, really?
I'm not... I don't know.
I can't believe it.
Well, I'm going to do it because I...
Okay,
I'll
be a good sport. I'll eat the cricket. Oh, my God. That looks so gross.
Oh, yeah. I forgot Karen has a thing about bugs. Here, Colin.
She shook them all out in front of where she was sitting. Now she can't sit there anymore.
Okay.
Here we go.
It's protein.
Yeah?
It tastes like a cheesy snack. It's you all know, in my teeth.
It tastes nutty.
Yeah.
It tastes nutty. Mm-hmm.
Good job, guys.
It's not my favorite. It's not my favorite, I have to say. The psychology of it being looking like...
The cricket is pretty dusty, and I could see that working as a flour, because as soon as you bite into it,
it all disintegrates.
Sort of, it disintegrates. Yeah. That was not... Okay.
Yeah. Nutty.
I did it, everybody.
I'm very appreciative.
Which is better, Chris?
The fact that it sort of kind of hits you as a fine powder is maybe not as appetizing as the silkworm, which really tasted like kind of eating
a snack.
Like a bad Cheeto, you know?
Chris, you are, without a doubt, I would say you're probably our most adventurous eater on the team.
Thanks, Regina.
Thank you for buying us
these snacks that we're not.
I'm glad we got to see them.
And I like
that we got to smell them.
That's right. Yep.
I'm working my way up.
Mm-hmm. You ate the cricket.
I have some more animal related trivia. Not trivia, but kind of news. A couple episodes ago, we talked about Yale's new mascot.
Handsome Dan. Well, the 18th was out. Okay.
Yeah. Handsome Dan 18. Yeah. Uh-huh. What made the headlines is instead of a traditional English bulldog, it is a kind of a newish breed. They're breeding them to kind of resemble the bulldogs of like 100, 200 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's more athletic.
And healthier.
Yeah, healthier. Old English bulldog. Ends with G-G-E in an old way. I just want to remind everybody to follow Handsome Dan 18 on Instagram, because boy, does that bring me joy every day. This dog, they just put this dog on the field doing different things, and the look, the bulldog look, they just look like they did something wrong all the time.
Like he's being scolded, you mean?
Yeah, like
I messed up.
He's like a little dog, like sitting on big statues or in the library or whatever. Highly recommend. And, the other animal-related news I suggest people read up on is Fiona, the premature baby hippo at the Cincinnati Zoo.
I heard about Fiona.
Yeah.
How's she doing?
Man, she's doing good. Like, it's a miracle how she survived. She was born premature and so required, oxygen tubes. And you have all these, like, very, very dedicated vets and expert kind of help her grow. And she was really underweight, especially for a hippo. And they have to, basically isolate her from her parents. But they're doing great work. It's great to read about her progress. Also brings a smile to everyone. Aww. So brighten up your day with those animal celebrities.
Is there a hippo cam that we can watch? There must be, right?
Oh. Well, they have a lot of videos.
Okay.
Don't worry.
Okay.
Videos and pictures of plenty.
Don't worry, Colin.
There's no 24/7 live feed?
No.
Well, what is wrong with modern
day? Yeah. Hippo cam.
Yeah.
Cool. Without further ado, let's jump into our first general trivia.
Oh. I have some further ado.
Oh, okay. Oh.
If I may. There was a correction sent in, so it's time for a very brief segment that we like to call. So I had a music quiz, and I said, I'm just going to get this out there. I said that the Bonnie Tyler song, I Need a Hero, was from the movie Flashdance. Was not. It was from the movie Footloose.
Yes.
I hope you can see how I might have gone wrong.
They're in the same...
We all thought
80 movies, yeah, beginning right. with...
They're in the same galaxy.
Dancing.
Ending with E. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
About highly dancing. Danceable.
Yeah. So much. Yeah,
highly
yeah, yeah,
danceable, both of them.
Well, because there's that angsty solo dance scene in both.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, they both have Footloose. Intense dancing.
They do have intense dancing. Yeah. And I was just thinking of the wrong intense dancing.
Yes.
It is from Footloose.
And, of course, many of our listeners right now are turning to their parents and saying, Mommy, Daddy, what's a Footloose?
Yes. And how does it differ from a flash dance?
Now, without further ado.
Yes, the ado is over.
Yes, let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hot Shot. And here I have a random Trivial Pursuit card. And you guys have your barnyard buzzers. So let's buzz in, answer some questions, listeners. Wherever you are, yell out the answers too.
All right.
All right, here we go. Oh, this is...
Unless you're in line for the 90s. PSA or something.
You know, I used to love getting screaming 90s, out. But we just keep getting 90s.
Well, you know what? Everyone we do will burn through and closer to the end.
You know, yeah. They don't have to be random cards. You know, if you want to start picking out some different cards on your own.
Should I?
I think you should.
You can exercise editorial discretion here. Yeah.
All right. Baby boomer it is.
There we go.
What? Okay.
All right.
Be careful what we wish for.
That was the worst advice.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, Chris.
Good luck, guys.
All right. All right.
TV.
Okay.
What show featured the incurable, neurotic Elliot Carlin?
Elliot Carlin.
Incurable, neurotic.
Neurotic. Oh.
Dana.
The Odd Couple?
Incorrect. Colin.
Was this the Bob Newhart show?
Correct.
Yeah. There you go.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because he played a psychologist or psychiatrist?
I forget which he was. He was one of the two, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right, for SS, I'm not sure what that stands for. What character did Johnny Sheffield play in a series of 11 jungle movies from 1949 to 1955? Chris.
Tarzan, Lord of the Apes.
Incorrect.
Who is it? Jungle movies.
1949 to 50 series of jungle movies.
George of the Jungle?
No.
No. It's a good
Tarzan.
I was going to guess Tarzan too.
The answer is Bamba.
Okay. I've never heard that before.
Whoa. Baby boomers out there know
it. Yeah.
All right. For national news, NN, what Apollo mission marked man's first trip outside Earth's gravity?
Oh.
Colin.
5.
Incorrect. Chris.
Apollo 3.
Incorrect.
4.
Incorrect. It is 8.
Mm. Oh.
8.
Mm. I feel like we could have known that. We could have known that one. Yeah.
First one outside Earth's gravity.
Oh, okay. This one we'll get. This is a everybody kind of question.
Okay.
What author's first three names were John Ronald Rule?
Oh. Everybody. No.
J.R.R. Tolkien.
Martin.
J.R.R. Yeah, Martin.
Cool. For LT literature, what did yoga exponent L.S. Rao fail to do on water in 1966 before 600 paying spectators?
Yoga.
Colin.
What is walk?
Yes.
And I know I didn't need to phrase it in the form of a question. Failed to walk on water. How many? That's a lot of people to assemble and then not be able to pull off that trick.
Watch
yeah,
this,
I gotta say,
guys.
Yeah.
Oh.
Was this a magic trick?
I believe that he believed he could do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is something worth following up on. All right, last question. RPM for records. What did the old man play knick-knack on a number 8?
Knick-knack.
My gate.
Incorrect. Yeah.
Oh.
Is it my knee?
Incorrect.
No, number 8?
Yeah.
On a crate?
No. Wait. Let's keep going.
Wait, this old man gate. He played knick-knack on my thumb?
Well,
no, it has to rhyme.
It has to rhyme.
Plate?
Plate!
I'm
like, what's it's got to be a comment. It's got to be a...
This is the knick-knack pet.
He played knick-knack on my thumb. And then it's,
I wonder if there are variations, because I don't think we said plate.
There must be.
I think
there must be some.
Yeah.
The one I heard.
Oh, well, maybe not
for
the baby boomers.
Hey, not bad, you guys, for baby boomer.
Not bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel like it's opened our minds.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Bamba.
Bamba. I'm going to have to look that one up.
I heard that.
That sounds like a cut-rate Tarzan.
Yeah. It's not Tarzan.
He's Prince of the Apes.
You know,
Prince of the Primates.
Archduke of the Jungle Snakes.
Majority whip of the apes.
This week's topic is kind of general, and it's we decided, just like the crickets that kind of powdered into nothing in Chris's mouth. We're going to talk about things that are dry.
Dry.
Yes. Whether if it's wit, whether if it's a drink, whether if it's weather.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling dry.
So this week we're leaving you
high and dry.
High and dry.
So that we might continue limbering up our brains in preparation for this heady episode of things, of dry things, I have put together a little list of idioms, English language idioms that use the word dry in some sort of metaphorical sense, ooh, such as leaving you high and dry abandon someone. Yep. Mm-hmm. So let me ask you guys this. Can you think of another idiom that means
Teacher Chris?
To abandon someone and that uses the word dry, that is not leave them high and dry?
Leave them drying?
Dry docked?
Drying on the line? No, that's like hanging.
Oh, you just leave someone hung out to dry?
Precisely.
Out to
dry. Yeah. Hang them out to dry or leave someone hung out to dry. To abandon them. Yeah.
It's like it's laundry related.
Yeah. So get out your buzzers. Here is an English language expression that means to stay alert or to take care.
Huh.
Colin.
Keep your powder dry?
Precisely.
Oh, okay.
Yes, keep your powder dry.
Huh.
Meaning don't let the gunpowder for your gun get wet.
Like
keep on the lookout and
I was
cautious.
I don't know, I thought it was baby powder.
Because if the gunpowder gets wet, it won't work anymore. Right, exactly. Yep. So keep your powder dry. A rehearsal. Everybody.
Dry run.
Yes. Boring, as in a movie or a play.
Just dry.
Well, sorry. Yeah. A colloquial expression that something was boring. Very boring. Yeah. You came out of the movie and
drier
thoroughly
than a...
bored by the whole thing, and somebody asked you, "What was that movie like?"
Watching paint dry.
Like watching paint dry.
Oh, sorry, I didn't buzz in.
No,
I was too excited. Yeah.
That's it, though. To take all of someone's money.
Oh,
no.
Yeah, I think I had to say it. Yeah, I was like, take him to the... No. Take him to the dry cleaners. Yeah.
To take
someone's... to take all of someone's money?
Yeah. An expression means to take all of someone's money.
Leave me dry, leave him dry.
Dry them out.
Drying.
To bleed them dry.
He's like, dry up the sponge.
Yeah.
And finally, a phrase that means that someone is mature, grown up, responsible.
Dried out. Dry behind the ears?
Yes, that's it.
Wow.
We often hear wet behind the ears to mean immature, not grown up, irresponsible, but dry behind the ears.
Oh, I haven't heard that.
What's an obsession with ears?
Don't know.
Well, it's like newborns, right? Isn't that like they're wet behind the ears?
I think
like
you're young. I think that's the idea.
Okay.
Yeah. Or you're too young.
Who knows? So,
yeah. All right.
Relatedly.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I was researching. I was like, oh, dry has no vowels. The word dry.
Why?
No A-E-I-O-U.
Yeah, right.
It's got the sometimes.
What is the longest word? What is the longest common word that does not have A-E-I-O-U?
It's not rhythm, or is it rhythm?
It is not rhythm.
Man, I feel like we've had this pub quiz. Yeah, is it a common word, not zizigy?
No.
Okay.
Well, rhythm is six, so it's got to be longer than six letters.
Rhythm
and
is
can only
a
use
dancer.
Y.
Okay, I'll be not tricky. Rhythms.
Really? Oh my god.
So that's it, huh?
Yeah.
Rhythms.
Okay.
All right, so I want to introduce you to a very, very important figure in American history.
Okay.
Thomas L. Jennings was the first black man to receive a patent in America. Yes. This is back in slavery times. So in the 1700s, 1800s, and he was actually born free. In New York, so he was not a slave.
Okay.
And in his early 20s, he was a tailor. This patent he got, devised a way to clean clothes, delicate clothes, without getting them wet. And one of the forerunners for dry cleaning.
Mm.
And he developed this process called dry scouring, which sounds a little bit more,
intense.
Yeah,
like
it sounds like there's some scrubbing involved.
Yeah.
And the patent was awarded in 1821.
Mm.
And here's the thing why this is a big deal. Slaves at this time, could not patent their own inventions wherever, because their effort was the property of their owner.
Right.
And so this regulation was, you know, this U.S. patent law dates back into 1793. Since he was born a free man, he was able to have a patent for himself. And it wasn't until that in 1861, patent rights were finally extended to slaves. So there were still slaves then, but then they can get a patent. Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, Thomas Jennings profited a lot from being this person who could dry clean clothes, especially in New York City.
Oh, yeah.
He was able to make a lot of money. He used the income from this to free the rest of his family who were slaves. He was able to fund all these abolitionist causes. Super cool. So what is this dry scouring that he invented, which was eventually became what we know as dry cleaning?
Wizardry.
We don't know.
It was wizardry. Yeah.
The exact chemicals or method that he used was lost because it was destroyed in a fire in 1836. So we know there was a patent. We just don't know what it is. But people...
It's chemicals, though,
it's
right?
Chemicals. I mean, it's dry cleaning at that time, we do know, dealt with turpentine, kerosene, benzene, gasoline, anything that is petroleum-based as solvents to dry clean clothes, which kind of makes sense because his patent was burned in a fire.
They use candles a lot at that time, and you're coated in kerosene.
Yeah.
Yes. So let's rewind back into where the origin or many origins of what became modern dry cleaning began. And dry cleaning, actually the process of using non-water to clean clothes dates back to like ancient Rome and other cultures. Yeah. So they used Fuller's Earth, which you mentioned in episode before, Colin.
Which was the kitty litter?
Yes.
Yes, kitty litter. They would mix it with ammonia that is taken from urine from public bathrooms.
So kitty litter.
Yeah. So
use kitty litter.
It's funny that they use
human litter.
They used pee. You know, to clean clothes back in the day.
Waste not, want not.
Yeah, exactly. So, Fuller's Earth. But most people would attribute dry cleaning to a French guy called Jean-Baptiste Joly of France. And this is around the same time as Thomas Jennings. And this French dude had... This is... I don't know if it's one of those nice origin stories, like a cute origin story, or if it's actually, you know, real or made up. But the story goes, his maid spilled kerosene or turpentine or whatever. On a tablecloth. And then he realized after it evaporated, like the spot seemed a lot cleaner. Mm. So he decided to dunk the whole thing in kerosene or turpentine, and then turns out it's so clean.
So he became a maid. I wonder who invented this process. Was it the person who had to clean the tablecloth, or the person who lived in the house with the tablecloth?
I observed.
She's like, I just happened to spill it. This is my job.
Yeah, you just happened to be standing here this time.
So during that whole time in the 1800s, you know, dry cleaning did exist, but they were using super highly flammable and toxic chemicals to clean clothes. So many cities required these dry cleaning stores to be not in the city, to be, you know, outside and, you know, outskirts of the city, because there's a chance that it might blow itself
off. Right.
You know, clothes were clean, but they might smell toxic, or it might be toxic.
A lot of off-gassing.
Yeah, exactly. And finally, you know, in early 20th century, they're like, there's got to be a better way.
Yeah.
And also because now coming into World War II, there was a petroleum shortage. People latched onto a chlorine-based solvent called perchloroethylene.
Okay.
Short name is PERC.
PERC.
PERC. Became the go-to solvent for dry cleaning from World War II to now. 85% of our current dry cleaning use PERC as the chemical. And here's the thing. It is not as flammable. It's a lot better than what people were using. Uh-huh. But the EPA and many other agencies are kind of concerned about, you know, the carcinogenic properties and the toxicity. I mean,
dry cleaning places always have that particular odor, you know?
Yeah, there might be signage. And, you know, especially where we are in California, declared PERC to be a toxic chemical and then will become illegal here by 2023.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Hmm. So, well, how do you clean your clothes, you know, through dry cleaning if you're not using PERC? The greener places are using liquid carbon dioxide, which is a very kind of a harder and more complex process for a lot of these laundry shops to do, but it does exist, or they use like silicate based solvents. But what we're, I think the whole technology is kind of progressing.
They're moving.
Let's not use, you know, super poison to dry clean our clothes.
And despite the name, I mean, they are liquids, you know, I mean, like it's, you know, you think dry cleaning.
So here's the thing. Until I researched this, I had no idea what's involved in dry cleaning. So I would go to a laundry shop and you see like all the racks of you know, on the moving conveyor belt.
I love that thing.
I thought that was like, they just kind of put that through a car wash or something.
You just spray it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I thought it was spray. I didn't know what exactly the dry cleaning process is.
I imagine like dry shampoo. I'm like,
oh, like
how
powder?
Does, yeah, like how does that clean your hair?
like the carpet cleaner, you know?
Yeah. Well, that you put down and you vacuum it up, but like dry shampoo, you just put in your head.
Yeah.
And then you go out, apparently. I don't know.
Like, but you're right, Colin. It is not dry. It's still wet. It just doesn't use water. And what actually happens in dry cleaning is it kind of looks like washing your normal clothes. Instead of washing it with water, they dump the solvent in and then they dry it to a certain temperature and it just all evaporates off. But for me, I was like, it was a mystery. I was like, what goes into the clothes car wash?
Yeah, well, because you never, it's not like you can really see the machines there, you know? Yeah. It kind of just disappears into the back of the shop. And
then it comes back with a, we love dry cleaning, like a paper on it.
Yeah. That's just so funny. It's like, yeah, we clean your clothes with kerosene. Like, for a while, they had factories like out in the countryside. So you would drop your clothes downtown and they would take it, leave town and do all this and then have it back.
It's like the dynamite factories. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
like
it
you
is.
Need to go way on the outskirts.
Exactly.
Of,
just in case you don't wipe out the whole block.
Huh.
But yeah, so there you go. Hmm. Thomas James, very interesting. That very cool. Interesting.
That is.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Well, I hope you guys get lost in the desert. My desert quiz.
Oh.
Get you.
good one, Colin.
I don't really hope you guys get lost in the desert, even metaphorically. Because that's bad. I don't want you to get lost in the quiz. I want you to answer these questions correctly.
Find your way out.
I want you to find
desert.
Your way through the desert.
Yeah. Okay. Find the oasis.
Yes. I have a quiz about and related to and using things desert related.
Okay.
Because those are dry.
Those are quite dry, Karen. Yes. This will be a write down quiz only because I think there's a couple questions in here that I think could be fun to see what you guys come up with
for goodness.
Varying answers.
The humiliation factor?
No, just more for my entertainment factor.
All right,
so get your dry desert thinking caps on. We're going to write down some answers here. Here we go. Number one, what is the world's largest desert?
Oh, this becomes like a what really counts as a desert?
Yeah, so I'm glad you said that, Karen. Think about that. What counts as a what is a desert? What does it mean to be a desert?
It's like low precipitation.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel like
is it a country? Are we writing a country or a desert?
I'm asking
name?
The name of the desert. The name of the desert. You know, you can, if you're not sure, you can take a guess if you're getting close enough here. Just write down, you know, go with your gut here. As you say, Karen, remember, a desert is defined mainly by precipitation. Ugh. Or lack thereof.
I feel like this is such a hint, but I'm still going to get it wrong.
All right. Answers up. So let's see what we got here.
I say...
Karen and Chris have both written Antarctica. And Dana has written Sahara.
I was thinking Antarctica, and then I was like,
Maybe it's the
it
Arctic.
It is, in fact, Antarctica.
Yeah. Yes,
the Antarctic desert. Oh, okay. But I will accept. I will fully accept Antarctica. Yeah, the Antarctic desert is, in fact, the largest desert. The Arctic desert is the second largest. Yeah. So our two biggest deserts, are the polar deserts, right? Yeah. The Sahara is the third largest desert.
Ooh.
And the largest hot desert. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, again, you have to fight against the impulse of desert equals hot.
Yeah.
And in fact, a lot of the biggest deserts are what they call cold deserts or polar deserts. Yeah.
I should have got it. I mean, you were giving the clues, telegraphing the clues. I was like, maybe Colin's tricky. I don't know.
I wasn't trying to be too tricky. Yeah, so to be a desert, basically, the general definition is no more than 10 inches of rain a year.
Okay. Oh.
Or not rain, 10 inches of precipitation.
Yeah.
So that can include rain, snow, fog, I mean,
frogs.
Mist, frost, dew, and any way you get your water. 10 inches, 250 centimeters. A third of the earth is desert of some form or another. Yeah.
Sadly, that is the limits of my knowledge about deserts, so everything else
You got the trick one. Yeah, we all know the trick one.
Y'all got the trick one there? All right. What is the name of the desert planet prominently featured in the original Star Wars movies?
Oh, my God.
Featured in almost all of the original movies. 5 out of the 6 movies. Take a guess.
Okay.
Star Wars movies.
Oh,
answers.
Man.
Yeah, it's somewhere in there.
Ugh,
all right. Answers up when you have them. Chris and Karen say Tatooine,
which is the
correct answer. Dana, to her credit, does have a Star Wars planet. She's put in Alderaan, which is where Princess Leia grew up.
Yeah.
Yes, no, Tatooine is the answer.
But that got blown to bits.
It did get blown to bits.
They talk about it.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah. They do.
Yeah,
that was. Yeah, luckily Leia was not on it as it happened. Yes. Tatooine, desert planet, has two suns.
Yeah.
Their primary export is Skywalkers.
Wait, what is their primary export?
Nothing really. I mean, they're kind of a barren outpost.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked, Karen. Most of the planet.
Oh, God.
Most of the planet is actually uninhabitable. I'm not going to go.
Okay.
We'll stick with movies here. Mm-hmm. This 1994 cult classic won an Academy Award for Best Costume Design. Mm. In large part due to its main character's flamboyant outfits.
Okay.
1994.
Cult classic.
All right.
Flamboyant outfits.
Are you keeping score? You are keeping score.
For my own interests. Remember the category.
I'm thinking about the category.
Okay. Karen and Dana are locked
I have
in.
An answer.
Chris is moving the pen.
It's about
the pen. The pen is making marks. Answers up. Chris says the mummy. I like it. Yeah, it's not too bad. Dana and Karen, however, have written the correct answer, which is I'll give you guys again close enough. The proper full name is The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
You guys have both
written Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. Close enough for Colin. I will give you guys the point.
Never heard of that movie.
It's the Australian drag.
No. Hugo Weaving.
Nope. Yeah,
Hugo Weaving.
Steven.
A young Aiken. Guy Pierce.
Guy Pierce.
Literally never heard of Terrence
Stamp.
You've never heard of it?
Keep naming actors.
They lip sync to, to like fabulous music.
They're crossing the desert in Australia.
Priscilla's the name of the bus.
Their RV or their vehicle. Their
not
vehicle.
To be
was
confused
that, was that
with
the spoiler at the end of the movie. Or?
No. Turns out it was a bus.
Turns out it was a rosebud.
Not to be confused with Tuan Fu. Thanks for everything, Julie Newmar.
To be confused. Yeah. All right, anyone's game so far. Next question: what is the largest city in the Mojave Desert? Our very own America's.
Oh,
America's.
It's in America.
Mojave Desert.
Largest city by population or
largest city by population. Yes. Also probably by area. Those tend to go hand in hand, not always.
Oh my gosh.
Largest city by population.
This is a good question. It's a fair question.
I don't even know where this is. Like, I'm guessing.
It is in the southwestern part of our fair nation.
Sure.
Largest city in the Mojave Desert. Covers parts of four states.
Oh, the desert.
The desert itself, not the city, yes. I have driven through the Mojave Desert. You guys may have driven through the Mojave Desert. I don't know. Answer's up.
Hold on.
Dana and Chris have written Phoenix, and so Karen wrote Phoenix, crossed it out, wrote Las Vegas, crossed that out, and is now starting to write Phoenix again. That's too bad, Karen, because I'm going to hold you to Phoenix. Okay. The answer is Las Vegas.
Ah!
Oh, okay. Yes, Las Vegas, Nevada, the largest city. Yeah.
Darn.
Next question. The Desert Fox was the nickname given to this decorated German commander during World War II. Desert Fox, name given to him by British journalists, apparently, for his exploits.
Don't know how to...
I will not hold you to spelling. Just phonetic is close enough for me.
I don't know how to say it either.
Answers up.
Oh,
Dana and Chris have written Rommel, Erwin Rommel, yes, which is the correct answer. Karen has written Goebbels. A big figure certainly in the German structure. But
why is it called Desert Fox?
Because he was really, really good at commanding the desert troops, particularly in North Africa. He was just widely considered, both by Germans and the Allied forces to be just a really smart, tactically minded guy. He was a huge hero. He was like a total popular folk hero in Germany. And as it turns out, that may have softened his punishment. He was part of the plot to kill Hitler.
Oh.
So the details are a little murky, but basically Hitler, when he found out, and was having all these people executed and punished for trying to have him assassinated, because Rommel was such a hero, he kind of went to him, like, I don't know if you guys have seen The Godfather, but he kind of did like a Frankie Pentangeli thing. He's like, you're such a hero, I might let you kind of just off yourself and keep your honor. And that's more or less what happened. It's there's a lot of just drama in that story. Switching gears dramatically here.
Okay.
The music video.
Yeah.
The music video for this hit 1999 song featured the artist being chauffeured through the desert in a sleek new Jaguar. After which Jaguar featured the song and video prominently in their ads.
99.
For 2 points, name the song.
1999.
Remember the theme of this round, the desert quiz. Name the song and the artist. Karen has something confidently writing down. I'll give you guys a hint. Karen does not want a hint.
Answer. All right.
I don't know the answer, but I'm just... deducing the year.
Can I give a mild hint, Karen?
Sure.
The word desert is in the name of the song.
Oh, okay.
In case you were wavering, this
you
might help you.
The artist and the song.
Okay. I'll give you 2 points here, if possible.
Is that 99? Okay, well.
All right, answer's up. All right. Karen and Dana have written the correct answer, which is Sting and his song Desert Rose. Chris has written Desert Flashdance, which I will give half a point to.
You're not far.
I will give half a point to Desert Flashdance.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't realize this until reading this, that he had the Jaguar in the video first, and then like he and his manager went to Jaguar, and they're like, hey, don't you think this would make for a great commercial? As opposed to like, really cynical product placement. So I see. I had just assumed.
But he got money for it, right?
Oh, yeah. You better believe.
No, Sting was the one who was cynical about the product placement, not Jaguar.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, well said.
All right,
last question. This country is home to the Great Sandy Desert and the Great Victoria Desert. This country home to both the Great Sandy Desert and the Great Victoria Desert.
Mm.
Anyone's game? Okay. Answers up. Karen says Tunisia. Chris says Canada. Dana says Australia. Dana has the correct answer. It is Australia. Oh, and I didn't even work in this bonus trivia nugget. The name Tatooine comes from from a city in Tunisia.
Really?
Which is where they filmed a lot of those desert scenes. Yeah. Okay. I had a feeling, Karen, that might be why you put Tunisia. Yeah.
Interesting.
So, all right. Well, good job, guys. Yeah, you made it largely through the desert.
Well, I don't think it could be a good job brain episode if we didn't talk about weird animals, right?
Whoa.
If we didn't have a weird animal segment. So I'm going to tell you guys about tardigrades.
Oh.
Or they're also known as water bears.
Oh, those are cute.
Yeah, and the other cute nicknames for them are space bears, pudgy wedgies, and moss piglets.
Oh, moss piglet. That's a good
one.
I haven't heard some of those. Water bears.
I heard water bears.
I'll call them water bears. That's easier. So they're microscopic creatures. They're tiny, and they're usually about half a millimeter big. The largest they get is 1.5. I'll tell you what they look like.
I was scared of them for a second because, like, water, you know.
Water bears.
Go swimming, watch out for water bears.
I mean, you still might want to.
It's like a new thing I got to watch out for.
Another thing.
Sharks were bad enough.
So they kind of look a little bit like squishy bears, except they have 8 legs, and their face is just like a round hole with sharp teeth. Like,
oh my god! So what's their real name?
They're called tardigrades.
Tardigrades,
and they were called that because they're slow walkers, like tardy.
Oh no!
Like when they saw, or, you know, they're just kind of tootling around when you look at them through the microscope.
Like, oh, bless their heart.
Yeah. So they're found all over the world. They usually live in dirt, and they eat moss and algae and lichen. But what's really significant about them is that they are really tough. They are one of the most resilient animals in the world. One of the most resilient animals we've ever found. They can survive extreme heat, extreme cold, pressures greater than like the deepest parts of the ocean times 6.
Whoa!
They've sent them to space. And they came back and they had babies and were healthy.
Really?
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Like in the vacuum of space.
In the vacuum of space.
Oh, not like on a spaceship.
They put them on a satellite. They put thousands of them on a satellite. They sent them to space. They were in space for 10 days, like with all the pressure and the solar radiation.
And the lack of
the vacuum.
Air.
Yeah. They came back and there were a bunch that were still alive. There were ones that laid eggs, had healthy babies.
Oh,
moved
my
on the
goodness.
Wow.
How do they survive these extremes?
Yeah. Is it their shell?
Kind of. They do it. They go into a cryptobiotic state. That's what they call it, where it's almost like they're dead. It's like mega hibernation.
Oh, sure. Yeah, okay.
They dry themselves out.
Oh.
Completely. They pull in their head. They slow their metabolism to 0.01% of the normal rate.
Kind of like a sea monkey, 3%.
Sea monkeys, they lay their eggs in little cysts and they can be dried, but not for this long. So, but really what's going on is that their DNA has some cool protein stuff going on. Like they can repair their DNA when they come back in the water.
What?
When they get, they're the only animals we found that can do this. And they're actually figuring out that we can take their proteins and put them in other things and it repairs the DNA.
It's like Wolverine.
Yeah, it's like Wolverine.
This is it. This is how
we figured something.
Get to Wolverine.
We're this
pudgy
wedgies. Yeah,
yep.
Just eating them by the handful. as I understand how medicine works.
Oh man.
Okay.
Get some cool claws made out of water bears.
So, like, how did they? It almost seems like something that they would discover accidentally. Like
they
how hard? Did they? Okay.
They did. They
whoops! I left them in space.
They live in dirt, and they can't control whether or not there's going to be a drought, or they're going to get dried out. And so somebody put water on it and like they sprung back to life. So they figured out they can be dried out for 10 years. And somebody was like, oh, I found one. It was dried out for 120 years and I put water on it and its leg moved.
Oh my God.
But nobody's been able to replicate that. So maybe you should put water on it and the leg moved in the water.
Right,
I don't know.
Right,
we don't know.
They can survive in extreme conditions. What about like in other substances? Can they like survive in acid?
Mm-hmm. Mm. They repair their DNA. You can put them in something crazy. Even if they get frozen with water and like that bursts their cells, like if not all of them get burst, they can they can repair themselves.
They're mini Wolverines.
Are they? They're not harmful to us in any way, right?
No.
I mean,
they eat moss.
Okay,
most of them eat moss. There's like 900 species in this category. Not all of them are Wolverine, but there are enough enough of them are hyper regenerative, hyper resilient.
Yeah, they are. They're like little super creatures. Yeah.
They can go to almost zero Kelvin and come back to life after. You know, they're not. They can't be that cold forever, but they can get very cold for longer
Chris,
than anything
else. Okay, Chris, since you've never seen this picture, I think me and Colin have. Let me show you.
And we brought a bag of them to eat.
And they're nacho cheese flavored.
They're cheese flavored. Water
like
bears.
Like a cute Mass Effect pet.
Oh, it looks, my goodness.
They're like a cross between a gummy bear and the sandworms from Dune.
Yes. They remind me, Yep, that's a good idea.
Give me some Mass Effect.
It looks like a rejected Disney animal pal from a princess movie.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have eyes. It's so cute.
Yeah, it's almost like if Disney and Guillermo del Toro teamed up to create a creature.
Whoa.
How long do they live? Like just on their own? Like
if no one's
shooting them into space or freezing them or dipping them in acid or something. So hey, I'm just trying to live a water bear life here. Yeah.
Stop messing with these guys. They're gonna rise up and attack us. They can repair their DNA.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
I wonder if they can die natural death.
What is life to a water bear?
I'm taking the show to some philosophical places here.
We're not figuring it out. We still don't know everything about what's going on with them.
Are you looking for a podcast that your whole family can enjoy that asks the deep philosophical questions like, do trees fart?
If you are, then you'll love Tumble, a science podcast for kids. I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Marshall. Join us as we explore stories of science discovery, from butts to animals, dinosaurs, astronomy, and everything in between.
You'll love these stories, and you'll learn something new.
Find and follow Tumble Science Podcast for Kids wherever you get your podcasts, or at sciencepodcastforkids.com.
Everybody shush! William Shatner has something to say.
Cat and Jethro, box of oddities.
What do you do when the woman you love dies? Well, of course you dig her up and you live with her.
Aww.
The show examines weird things.
There are plenty of old photographs from this time period of children out in the streets playing in and among the dead horse carcasses.
Oh, I miss those days. Things used to be so much simpler.
Cat and Jethro.
Then there's the urine wheel, which sounds like a really bad game show.
Thing done weird things. Cat and Jethro, box of oddities. That is really mysterious.
Join Cat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the box of oddities.
The Webby Award-winning Box of Oddities podcast from Airwave Media.
Well, we rejected the 90s Trivial Pursuit card, but I'd like to bring us back to the 90s anyway. With some trivia about the 1990s that may even be on one of those cards in the giant box. Who knows?
Probably. What version of Windows?
When I think of fad beverages of the 90s, this is one of the things that always comes up between, you know, your Crystal Pepsis and your Zimas. And I always think of this, Bud Dry.
Yes.
Bud Dry.
Why ask why?
Dry but dry.
I don't know what this is.
Yeah, well, I mean, not, you know, Karen, why ask why? So you have your Budweiser beer, you've got your Bud Light, which is lower in calories, and then in the 1990s, Bud and a number of other beer brands introduced dry.
Oh, man. I remember the dry
beer. Is it like a Kool-Aid packet?
No.
No. Do you want to take a guess at what a dry beer is?
Now an alcoholic.
I always assume what they were going for is like with wine. There's like the dry wine. It's just basically just less sweet.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. They ferment more of the sugars and attenuation is what it's called. The opposite. The word attenuation is the opposite, roughly, of amplification. So in audio, you have amplification and attenuation. And attenuation is what they use in brewing to talk about the process of the yeast turning the sugars into alcohol.
Ah.
And if something is highly attenuated, more highly attenuated, it means more sugars turn into alcohol. So it's less sweet.
And more alcoholic.
And that's and more alcoholic, yeah, unless you do something to it to balance that out. So, yes, Bud, the idea behind Bud Dry and Michelob Dry and Coors Dry and all these dry beers in the 1990s, you can watch some ads for them. They are extremely 1990s. They all look like the Van Halen Right Now video.
I love that video.
And the idea was crisper, cleaner, less aftertaste.
Yeah.
Less aftertaste, which means
that goes down easy.
You don't taste this disgusting
having it. It's slow. Like once you swallow it doesn't linger in your mouth forever, which is funny now because everybody's all into IPAs.
Yeah. Right.
Nothing but after you know you're drinking an IPA for a good long while. But so that was it was just this whole big thing. And there was a joke on The Simpsons where they went to the Duff Brewing Factory and there were like three vats that beer was pouring into. It was like Duff, Duff Light, and Duff Dry. And the camera pulls back and they're all just being serviced by the same giant pipe, so why?
Yeah.
Why we must, I mean, you know, contrary to the Budweiser commercial, I am going to ask why of this dry, of this brief
trend.
Dry beer fad.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
So, sorry. What would dry beer taste like? Is it just beer without the bitterness and the hopping?
Well, no. It would actually be more bitter.
Yeah, because the sugars are bigger.
Yeah, so it'd be less malty, less sweet, and leave less of a taste in your mouth afterwards, though.
Okay.
Well, there is a reason that this happened.
Okay.
And it's a good story. There was a very specific reason why all these American brewing companies, all the big ones, were like, we gotta try this. The reason why is because, okay, Bud Dry, no longer being made. Michelob Dry, Coors Dry, all long, long phased out, right? There is a popular beer that is a dry beer that still has the word dry in it. Karen.
It's not American, right?
It's not American.
Asahi?
It is Asahi Super Dry.
Oh, yeah.
Asahi Super Dry. Okay. One of the most popular Japanese beers. That is a dry beer, a dry lager, just like, you know, Bud Dry, et cetera, et cetera. And that was the first dry beer. That was the first beer that was, it was not the first dry beer. There were plenty of German beers that you would be considered the same level of attenuation, the same idea.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was the first beer that marketed itself very specifically as being the dry beer. And the idea was in the mid 80s, around 1985, they went around asking, so Asahi only had about a 10% market share of the beer market at that time. You got your Sapporo, right? You have Suntory, Kirin, Asahi. Asahi was like low man on the totem pole. And they were like, what are we going to do? And they asked people, well, what do you want? They were like, and the customers were like, crisp, refreshing, no aftertaste. Like that's what the consumers said, said that they wanted out of a beer. So they're like, okay.
Some carbonated water.
Sure. We'll they were like, well, we want to get drunk too. So.
Right. Also true. Yeah. And the Asahi Super Dry actually did have a little bit more alcohol. Not a whole lot, but like, 10-ish% more alcohol because they used a strain of yeast that would, you know, ferment more of the sugar, and turn it into alcohol, thus leaving you with like a dry wine. It's not as sweet. It's more alcoholic. And they marketed it as Asahi Super Dry starting in 1987. And in Japan, it was a huge hit. Big, big hit. They couldn't keep it in stock. Asahi's market share doubled like overnight. I mean, it was this massive, massive hit for them. And like the other beer makers who were usually very quick to react and bring out, competitive kind of stuff, they waited on it. And they let Asahi Super Dry get very big very quickly. Now, what was funny is, so immediately in the beginning of February 1988, and this is something that Japanese people remember. This was a thing called the Dorai Senso. Pan, if you said any Japanese person who lived through the 80s, just like we remember the Cola Wars.
Sure.
They
sure.
remember the Dry War. That is what Dorai really? Senso literally translates to. February 1988, literally within the same week, within just a couple of days of each other, Sapporo, Suntory, and Kirin all roll out Sapporo Dry, Kirin Dry, Suntory Dry. And they start, I mean, they are going at it for this exploding dry beer market in Japan.
Wow.
Kirin gets Gene Hackman to do commercials for Kirin Dry. Suntory, this is all just beginning of 1988. Suntory gets Mike Tyson.
Wow.
World heavyweight champion Mike Tyson's punch out, peak of his career, Mike Tyson.
Yeah. Wow.
In a Japanese commercial for Suntory Dry. And the idea is, this is not a sweet beer for ladies.
Right.
This is
manly,
macho,
tough beer.
Yeah, dry beer. Huge, huge success. And then just immediately, so there's a New York Times report from July 1988 talking about it's titled, "And Now from Japan, the Hot New Dry Beers," talking about how huge this, by the way, not only was it really popular, this was a like major, like a Tunguska event in the Japanese beer industry.
Yeah.
Because everybody had been kind of going along with the same market share up to this. Asahi, by introducing Super Dry, basically like upset the whole apple cart of the Japanese beer industry, and was able, I think Asahi now actually is the market leader, took it over
from Kirin.
I mean, so basically like it was a huge, huge major event that really like changed up the Japanese beer industry. And so these dry beers start getting imported into finer restaurants and such in America, and that's what the Japanese or the New York Times article is reporting on.
Yeah.
And this is straight out of the New York Times story. A retailing expert, a guy who works at the Takashi Maya Company, the big department stores in Japan, says, well, the Japanese are much more fad-oriented than Americans. This is true. And then also points out, and this is very true, the meaning of the word dry is important. Dry suggests something new, decisive, and bold. In Japan, a wet person is very strongly attached to family, company, and friends, while a dry type would be more individualistic. So, the word, and this is true, like they use wet and dry in Japan to talk about like emotional versus cold and calculating, and that's the metaphor that they use. So dry in this sense on the beer in Japan had grand connotations.
Interesting.
Like, you're so cool and dry. This is, so it was a marketing success. It was exactly what they wanted. It is still to this day like Asahi Super Dry and the dry beers.
I can picture it in my, until you said that I never connected the two, that the Asahi Super Dry is
dry
at
beer.
All is dry beer. Yeah.
Right. And this is how they thought they were going to make inroads into the United States, because it was such a huge, hugely popular thing. And so, again, New York Times, August 1989, so just 1 year later.
Wow.
Dry beers flood market. A wave or a mirage? There were, by that time, the New York Times said, August 89.
That's a good headline.
19 different imported and domestic dry beers had been introduced into the U.S. market in 16 months. Just ridiculous. There was one beer industry analyst in the story that had noted that they had moved like uncharacteristically fast. Like, he's like, you've never seen Michelob and Bud
react.
Like roll out. You know, new products so quickly with like bare minimum of like, should we do this or not? This was the 80s. I mean, this was the mid 80s, like, and like everybody was looking to Japan for, you know, transistor radio, or not transistor radios, but Walkman, Discman, Nintendo.
Video games.
And so the hot new beer thing happens, and all the American companies jumped on it. Huge failure.
How transparent the ad is. Like, why ask why? Just drink it. Yeah, don't quit. Yeah. Why ask why? Just try it. Just try Bud. Dry.
We don't know either.
Please buy some.
Yep. So that was the big marketing campaign of just like,
they didn't know.
You know, just, I guess, just drink it. We don't know.
Don't worry about it.
You know you're going to drink whatever we tell you to. So let's just admit it.
Yeah.
And it did not last very long.
Oh, no. No, Bud, I mean, Bud Dry apparently was made until 2010.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Really?
But, like, it's not like you could go find it. You know what I mean? Okay. So, yeah, it was out there, but it was, very tiny little part of the market. Huh. There were some diehards. I mean, it is a different experience. And if you wanted a beer that was, like, as absolutely unsweet as possible, like, you would do that. And the U.S. ones were not higher in alcohol. They were fermenting more. They were taking more of the sugars out, but then they weren't leaving as much alcohol, essentially, in the final product. Because, in fact, it the funny thing is that, like, people pointed out, too, in these New York Times articles that it was like, this is going against the common grain right now. Like, people are moving towards moderation, light beer, less alcohol. And we're introducing this product that has this this reputation of having more alcohol, even though it doesn't, and it's not light and it's not sweet. Yeah.
Well, it's like in Japan, they did market research and they're like, what do you guys want?
Right.
And they said, in Japan, this is what we want. And they did no research in America.
Here it was just like,
what do you want? Oh, you want, okay, we'll do what we want.
Yeah, and all these articles are full of people scratching their heads going, we don't think this is like what the market
is into. That's not what they asked
for,
right.
So when you were talking about Bud Dry and stuff like that, it came from Japan.
So
that
it's called Asahi Super Dry?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you guys know the clothing brand Super Dry?
Yeah, which I think was just taken directly from that. But it's a British clothing brand.
Yes, it's not Japanese.
Right.
Oh, I didn't know that, man.
Super Dry is not from Japan.
Yeah.
It's from a British company with Japan aesthetics.
Yeah.
It's sized like Japanese clothes. Yeah. It has a bunch of kanji and Japanese characters on it.
They must be using the same definition of dry as like cool. You know.
But still, I mean, but I was like, oh my, it blew my mind.
It's Japanese-ish.
It's Japanese-ish.
It's funny, in English, dry is kind of the opposite.
Yeah.
It's like boring and no spice.
Yeah. Well, that's the connotations of the word are different here than they are there.
There's like dry and wet. Ours is like cool and warm, I guess.
Yeah.
Right. You know, like, yeah. Oh, yeah. Hot. Yeah. Hot and cold.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. My turn. Last dry quiz. And I have a music quiz.
All right.
Yay. So keep your pens and paper. These are some hits. There is a theme. The theme is very Karen theme.
Okay.
It's kind of complicated, but it's kind of on topic.
Okay.
But you know what? Just let's just identify.
Let it wash over us.
Yeah.
I like it.
I'll play
like
clips of music.
Like a wave of sand.
Yeah. I'll play clips of music, and it is your job to identify the artist, whether it's a band or a singer or whatever. Maybe these will stir up some memories, and maybe those memories will formulate into a theme.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Some people work things out, and some just don't know. Let's go wait till the water's dry. We might watch our whole lives pass us by. Let's go wait till the water's dry. We'll make the biggest mistake of our lives. Don't do it, baby.
All right, answers up. Colin puts Boys to Men. Dana, Boys to Men. And Chris, Boys to Men. You are correct. That's Boys to Men. Ooh.
We all spelled it with the Z.
Boys.
And the Roman numeral two.
Men. Very good.
The 90s.
Water runs
couldn't spell anything correctly or the normal way.
Okay. Here we go. Next one.
You ain't never gotta worry, I'm down for you, baby. Best believe that, when you need that, I'll provide that, you will always have it. I'll be on deck, keep it in check, when you need that, I'ma let you have it. Beats in the drum like dum dee dee. I like the dirty rhythm you play. I wanna hear you calling my name, like, hey mama, mama, hey mama, mama. Bang in the drum like dum dee dee.
DJ. All right. So meaning the person singing may not be the...
Yeah, person singing may not be
the one
the artist.
Oh, okay. Oh.
All right, answers all right. up.
Nope, that's wrong.
Colin put DJ Khaled. Dana puts Rihanna. And then Chris puts Rihanna.
Yeah.
That was David Guetta.
Ah.
With featuring a bunch of people, notably Nicki Minaj.
Nicki Minaj? Yeah.
I figured it was a guest, on somebody's, okay.
Here we go. Welcome everybody to the Wild Wild West.
I've got
Colin put
Tupac and Dr. Dre.
Put Tupac.
I put a robot.
A robot.
Is it a robot?
You know, yes.
Wait, is that a joke answer? Do you know who sang that?
No, I don't know.
Tupac.
Okay.
And Andre. Mm-hmm. California Love.
California big, does big know hit. How to party.
Yeah. It does. From Diego to the Bay.
All right. Next song. You gotta take it. Far too much emotions at me. Okay, which one is it? Let's see. Colin puts.
I put En Vogue.
Which girl group?
Spice Girls.
It's Spice Girls.
It's Spice Girls. It's Spice Girls.
Their other song.
Yes, their other Say You'll Be There. Well, there's Two Become One.
There are a lot of songs.
Nope, just the two.
Spice World.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every boy, every girl.
Nope.
All right. Next one. Closer than I've ever felt before. And I know, and you know, there's no need for words right now. And I can feel you breathe, washing over me, and suddenly I'm melting into you. There's nothing left to prove, baby, all we need is just to be caught up in the touch. Five, four,
dang it, golly gosh.
Three,
ding dang do.
Two. One.
Oh, what's her name?
No.
Okay. All right, Colin, what are you writing?
I'm just putting the Judds, but
Country
it's not her.
Country McYosel.
No.
I think it's
that. Well, okay, Dana right. puts
Shania.
That's who I think it is.
Chris put Faith Hill. It is Faith Hill.
Oh, all right.
I saw it and I was like, oh yeah, that's who it was.
Well, it actually comforts me because I was trying to remember Shania Twain. Oh, so I'm glad I would have been wrong anyway. Yeah.
All right. Last song. Answers up, man. What
I feel
a good
so tentative.
Song.
There's three bands, and they all.
Colin,
are the
you
same
put
G and F and R.
Guns
and
Roses, Dana.
Guns and Roses.
Guns and or Roses.
And or, it is Guns and Roses. Okay. Mm-hmm. November Rain.
Yeah.
That song came out in the 90s, but man, reading about it, Axl Rose started working on the song as early as 1983.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's been honing it. You know, and then also he arranged all of the orchestra, all the strings and the orchestration. Like he was the one who made musical arrangement. Very cool. All right, there we go. Let's see. Let's recap.
Boys to Men, David Guetta.
Okay, we got Boys to Men, Water Runs Dry.
Yeah.
David Guetta, Hey Mama. Guns N' Roses, November Rain. California Love by Tupac. Say You'll Be There, Spice Girls, Breathe, Faith Hill. There's a reason why they all kind of fall in the 90s era.
She's been very clear. There has something. But why would it have to be in the 90s? Yeah.
No, not have to be in the 90s. All happen to be in the 90s.
But there's a reason they all fall into that.
Yeah.
There's a logical.
Were they all the music videos were in the desert?
I was thinking that, but that could have been any. Oh, okay.
Well, because MTV stopped.
I was thinking that. I was like, because California Love, they're in the desert.
Yeah,
all right.
It's all mad. They're all all shot in the desert. I mean, the thing is, even though music videos are being made, I mean, the titular kind of like MTV culture was in the 90s were big budgets. Right. There are a lot of videos that were shot in the desert, and I had to double check each one of them that were actually filmed in a real desert. Not at a soundstage.
Not just simulated desert.
I almost had Shakira whenever, wherever, but that was green screen. This is like them at the desert, and I could locate, you know,
Precipitation records from each video shoot.
And so, yeah, they're all shot in a real desert.
Okay.
Good job. Cool. So, yeah.
That was my first thought, but then I'm like, no, it's got to be something with the 90s. She was so clear.
It was such a big trend. Like, big, epic.
Yeah,
it was before the mirror room phase when every video was in that mirror room.
With the fisheye lens. And that Guns N' Roses, that November Rain video was really expensive.
And wasn't
also, it was an 8-minute song.
It was long. I remember. Yeah.
All right. Good job, Dana. Right. Good job, everyone. And that's our show. Thank you guys for joining me. And thank you guys, listeners, for listening. Hope you learned a lot of stuff about deserts, about music videos, about water bears, about dry beer, and about dry cleaning. And we'll see you guys, I want to say next week, but let's just say next episode.
Inching closer to 200.
You can find our show on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, and on our website, goodjobbrain.com. And also, pick up Good Job Brain, the book, if you have time.
If you can read.
Yeah.
And even if you can.
There are pictures in it.
Aspirational reading.
Maybe we can like just record an audiobook of us.
That's of the book.
Anyways. We'll work
talk
on
to
that.
We'll get back
to about that.
Yeah. We'll get back. We'll do lunch. All right. See you guys next time.
Bye.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.